A little bit of a repeat at the start this week, but I want to ask you once again, what did you order this time, and we'll go from there.
See, I would say that this section is a bit redundant, but I can see the show notes. However, I am very consistent, and what I said last week is what has happened. I bought my 40mm Space Gray aluminium watch, and it is coming on Friday, and I'm very excited about it. And that's about it.
I mean, it's not overly redundant. Like, we've actually ordered now, and
yeah, but some of us change our minds.
Well, no. So I was fortunate last week to have set on the record that I'd probably order an iPhone. Although privately, I was telling you I had no plans to, and so I kind of saved myself on the record there. But also one thing I wanted to order like isn't coming on day one, so I don't think it ever would have. So you know, there's some mix up there. So you've got the Series 4 Space Gray Aluminum as planned. I've ordered to start. The big thing I wanted was the Apple Watch Series 4 in stainless steel gold with the Milanese loop, and I later realized that you could buy the black sport band. Because it has a black pin on it that's not silver, so it doesn't clash. It kind of just blends in. Because you can't buy like gold pins on their own with the bands. There's only like one band that you can buy with the gold watch, and I think it's not for me. But I imagine I'll use the gold watch with the black sport band like 90% of the time, and then like sometimes use the gold Milanese loop to like dress it up. But that's not coming on day one. That's coming a week later, like 9:28 to 10:02 is the range there, and I like ordered as soon as I could. I don't think anyone is getting that watch configuration on day one. I think like it was never coming on day one for anybody.
Yeah, there were an awful lot of people saying it was back ordered like immediately.
Yeah, so I've also arranged that's through Apple's website. I've also arranged through Best Buy to purchase the Series 4 aluminum silver 44mm. Both of these are the largest size. Just like the most base model you can get without LTE. Just for the sake of like being able to review the new hardware with a head start of 1 week versus like waiting a week to get my own. That one and most likely that I'll probably end up returning it. I don't think there's anyone in my family that would need that specific like color watch, etc. So and I'm not ready to like be generous and gift it away that soon. So I'll probably send that one back after I'm done with that when mine gets here. I also did order an iPhone XS. That's how I say it, right? Max. And when I woke up at like what's 2 a.m. my time to order the watch, I also looked at the iPhones after I was through ordering the watch, and I couldn't get the phone I would have ordered in the size, configuration, color on day one. So I was like, oh, that was easy to resist. I'll just go back to bed. So I did. And then like later on the next day, I was listening to people talk about how if you have these upgrade plans, you know, there's no point in not upgrading because you pay the same amount anyway. And I looked at the math and I was like, you know, the only benefit to me not upgrading is if I pay off my 10 and then switch carriers, which is like kind of appealing, but like go from AT&T to where that would be a better deal, a better coverage where I live. So I thought I might as well just upgrade because I don't actually plan on changing carriers in a year's time. So I decided to upgrade. I used AT&T's website at that point because the Apple website didn't have the iPhone I ordered on day one. And AT&T's website for several days had said that they'll have day one shipments on a lot of configurations. And so I'm really skeptical of that. But recently it started saying like the week after. So maybe it's right. But I got the iPhone XS Max 512GB because when you pay monthly like that, it's like the difference is like less than $10. And I'm thinking I could have like my whole photo library local and a lot of music and that kind of thing in Space Gray. And it was actually a hard decision, like because the difference in 10 to 10S is so minimal, I think, at least from like the presentation and the website. And then it's only like if you want the big phone or gold that it's super obvious what you're getting.
Yeah.
And I don't know if the big phone will be right for me. Like I also ordered the Apple leather case, Cape Cod blue, kind of reluctantly because I had a blue, electric blue leather case on the 10 and I love that color. And this is like more dull. But that case arrived today, and it, like, eats the iPhone 10 inside of a case. Like, it's so big that I think I'll probably have trouble typing on it one-handed and, like, reaching Control Center without reachability.
Yeah, I mean, because it is slightly smaller than the physical size of a Plus,
yeah,
like a 5.5-inch phone, but you have to remember that the Plus top of the screen was lower simply because it had a massive forehead on it. So the actual top of this screen is definitely higher, even if the overall physical size is, you know, a hair smaller than the Pluses.
Yeah, so it's a two-hand device, and I think a lot of the reviews have hit on that. It'll just take it, you know, getting it here in person to really decide and know. But this iPhone case I received is very large, so. But I'm also excited though, because I think I can handle it two-handed and like rely on the one-handed keyboard and voice control and the Apple Watch as needed, and probably get by with it. But we'll see how it goes.
Yeah. So the iPhone and the watch reviews came out this week. I think they were mostly as expected, apart from a few areas. Like normally, I like to think I'm pretty, like, fastidious in covering this stuff. I watch the Kinect very intensely. I watch it multiple times. I read all the website stuff. I follow along. And generally, when the official embargo reviews come out, there's very, very few areas where I actually, like, in my head, can't think of what they're going to say, if that makes sense. Like, you can kind of get, normally, in an average year, you can get a pretty good judgment of what people are going to say about this product in particular. This time around, I'd say there was one of the biggest discrepancies that I can remember, because I kind of think Apple mucked up the event presentation. I think they overemphasized the advances in the chips, and it was too abstract. It was too much like speeds and feeds, and not enough this is what the changes are going to be, because they did mention like the smart HDR and the portrait segmentation, and so it's not like they didn't touch on it, but I don't, because they were talking about so many different technical concepts, even if you understood what they mean, and I generally understand most of it, it just felt like they were kind of putting everything at the same level because nothing stood out. And the big takeaway I got from reading all the iPhone XS reviews is that the camera changes are more significant and substantial than what I think you'd believe them to be just based on watching the event video, because Apple obviously says it's, you know, their best camera ever, and they show the pretty pictures taken by professionals, but you can never rely on them to really explain what you mean. And it really does seem like the smart HDR stuff does take a meaningful step beyond what the iPhone 10 could offer with its images. Like, some of the images I've seen in these reviews are way better than what I would have guessed they were going to look like based on what Phil Schiller said when he announced the phones.
Yeah, there's even small stuff like I saw Matthew Pandrina tweet today that when you're taking a video and you tap the little shutter button to take a photo from the video, like that came out with iPhone 5 or so, that photo that you take is now does HDR stuff in the photo, and also that if you're shooting a panorama photo, which I love, like those are also on the iPhone 5 era, and I've taken so many and I've had like wall prints of those things, so they look so good, that those are HDR now for the first time, which I didn't realize they weren't before. But that's a big deal, because like if you're taking like a landscape photo in panorama, you start over here away from the sun, and at some point you get the sun in there, then the exposure is way different. And that part just gets washed out, and then like you keep going, and it's just like part of it where there's light, you just can't expect it to be that good. And if that's using HDR now, then that's nice.
Yeah, and another thing that I first saw in Pan's review, although a few different people noted it, is that Apple told him that in the future, the depth control feature, which is the feature where you can adjust the amount of blur on portrait mode, in the future that will be visible live in the camera. So obviously at the moment you get a preview of what portrait mode looks like in the camera, but when you get your phone on Friday, to adjust the blur amount, you have to take the picture, then go into the camera roll and then edit it and drag the slider there.
Yeah.
In a future OS update coming late this fall, maybe it's 0.1, maybe it's 0.2, it's not clear, they're going to actually show you that live in the viewfinder frame, and you can adjust the slider on the fly. That is really, really cool, because when you first see this demo of them adjusting the blur on the stage, it just kind of looks like, oh, it's a standard blur you do in a photo editor. There is a lot more smarts that go into making this blur than first meets the eye. And I can understand why Apple didn't take the time out to explain all that, because it's very in the weeds and complicated. But there are many, many steps involved than just like a one-pass Gaussian blur, like you do in Pixelmator, right? There's a lot of simulations and modeling that they're doing to try and replicate as much of what you would get from an actual full-frame camera as possible.
Yeah.
But the simple feature of adjusting the blur on the fly, that's really cool whatever way you slice it. And it's kind of weird to me that they didn't demo that. When they originally did portrait mode, it didn't ship till October, and they announced it alongside the iPhone 7 Plus at the event, and they said, we've got this portrait mode coming later this year, and it eventually ended up shipping the month after, but they didn't say that at the September event, and they happily talked about how good the portrait mode was then. I feel like this demo of doing depth control on the fly would have been far more interesting than like the Elder Scrolls game, and it would help reinforce that like there is actually meaningful advances here in both the camera technology and, you know, the neural engine chip stuff that they were going on about so much. Like, when they were talking about that stuff, there was never an example that you could really, like, latch on to as, this is why this is better.
Right.
That's kind of what I took away from the presentation. And then in these reviews, there's, like, a one line about this pretty crazy new feature that they just didn't even bother to mention. Like, that's really strange to me.
Yeah, it's like maybe they didn't want to talk about too many things that are forthcoming but not ready yet. But they did include like the ECG app and on the watch is not ready at launch, and
eSIM,
and yeah, eSIM, the dual SIM stuff isn't ready at launch. That's in the future. So like, but maybe they like hit a threshold and like it's too much stuff that's coming later. But it's also weird that like it's not in the keynote, and it's, as far as I know, not on Apple.com anywhere. It's only in these reviews where they've been briefed and told this, but like no one's been shown this, I guess. But yeah, it does sound neat, and that would be just like one more compelling feature that they could have shown, even if it's like a canned demonstration. But it isn't like they're shy about showing off camera improvements. Like that's one of the reasons people upgrade iPhones, and it's pretty tangible. But so yeah, that's an interesting detail from the reviews, at least.
And then Apple Watch wise, one thing that I saw that was interesting is that the fall detection is turned off by default if you're under 65, and it bases that off when you information that's in the health app, because it asks you for your date of birth when you set it up.
Yeah, that's curious.
Yeah, and I saw you can turn it on, but you have to go and dig into the watch app settings and find it. And when you turn it on, the alert that pops up gives you the justification for why it's turned off for younger people. And it basically says that the more physically active you are, the more likely you are to trigger fall detection unintentionally due to high-impact activity.
Okay.
So that kind of puts some doubts in my mind about how good the feature is going to be. And what was kind of interesting is that I didn't see a single review that actually got the fall detection to fire, because Apple says that they've done some, you know, advanced training and advanced machine learning to be able to know when you're falling over and faking it and when you're actually falling over. And so I saw a lot of people saying they're all jumping to their couches or jumping off here and there, and they could never actually get a fall detection alert to trigger. And so it's kind of funny that both like the leading health features, the fall detection and the ECG, which will be coming later, these reviews couldn't really cover it. And so it's kind of planted a little seed of doubt in my mind about just how good the fall detection is going to be, because if it was actually really, really good, they wouldn't need to have it disabled by default for people that are moving around.
Yeah, it's definitely something that I will turn on when I get my watch and then kind of watch for like what might accidentally trigger this, you know, because I, you know, we discussed last week, I think that people under 65, even people that are athletic, that there are situations where this could be useful. Like if you're out running and you get hit by a car and the car keeps going, or like, you know, if you trip and have an accident, like, you know, I know people that have done housework and fallen off the ladder, and you know, it's easy to do. And in that case, you'd want this. So it's tricky. Like, I wonder if in the future, eventually they'll not need that option and that.
Yeah. Like maybe if they're just going to roll it out slowly and gate it by age just to see, and then they can work out if it's safe enough for them just to enable a standard. Because realistically, you want it always enabled, because the average person is not going to go dig into those menus and change that.
Yeah, the low heart rate alert stuff, and I'm not sure if the high heart rate always like this too, but the low heart rate stuff is turned off by default as well. And like that came to the older watches, I guess at least the Series 3 through WatchOS 5. It wasn't in the betas, but it was in the GM.
I believe that when – do you remember back when you set up like WatchOS 4 originally and you went into the heart rate app for the first time?
Uh-huh.
And it said, welcome to the heart rate app, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
I believe – that when you trigger that screen, it does offer now to set up low heart rate alerts.
Yeah, that, but for everybody
Everybody on the betas didn't see that because obviously it's not a brand new setup.
Yeah, well, so you, I think you turned it on from the watch app on the iPhone, and I was able to do it from the watch app on the heart rate app on the watch with that pop up.
So I think that one gives you the option like pretty in your face, whereas full detection is purely buried in the settings if you're under 65.
Right. So something to know. With the low heart rate thing, I've seen people who use their watch for sleep tracking have these alerts accidentally. Like, because you get to set the threshold for like how low the heart rate is. There's three options besides off. But as you sleep, like I guess naturally your heart rate is much lower. And some people use their watch for sleep tracking. And so that's something to consider, is if you do that, then you may want to raise the threshold for when you get these low heart rate warnings. Because right now there's no official sleep tracking on the watch. There's just third party apps that can pull it off. And so that doesn't talk. Like I imagine if Apple did sleep tracking and you went into that mode, like it detected you were asleep, it would not send you an alert for a low heart rate warning.
But because at the moment it's all unofficial, so it doesn't think about that stuff.
Although the high heart rate alerts at night, I think, are actually useful. So that's a separate issue. One of my takeaways from the watch reviews weren't from anything written, but it was from the YouTube unboxing video, specifically from iJustine. She showed the box, the Apple Watch Series 4, you know, sealed, and then I did see this in one of the print reviews too, but like not in action. But that the whole box style has just totally changed. Like, and it's happened every year. Like, it's kind of gotten less nice. But this is just different enough to be really interesting. The outer part of the watch box is actually like a paper seal, and then you kind of unfold it origami style. And there's two packaged boxes within that, one for the watch itself and one for the band that you bought with, you know, in your configuration. And so it's the first time that the watch is shipping with the band not attached, which is interesting. And you get this little pouch that goes around the watch, and it's like a little felt, you know, soft cloth pouch. It's kind of neat. That's an example of it getting a little bit nicer, I guess. But you still feel like
it's because when I got my first watch in 2015, and I've always had the sport model, so
yeah,
it came in this long plastic. Like, obviously, it was all in a cardboard box at one point, but you lift off the cardboard and there'd be this, like, rounded rectangle, long plastic case that you'd open the top off, and there would be the watch in the center with the band pre-connected laying flat.
Yeah.
And that was really, really cool. And yes, it's just like this, it was like a plastic case, but it had, like, this nice lining inside it, like microfiber, like, smooth lining.
Right.
And so it wasn't the most premium thing on earth, but it did feel, like, pretty swish that you had this nice little, like, carry case, as it were, and your first experience of using the watch was you lift up the thing and it's already attached, just laying there looking at you. Like, I remember that as being like a really, really cool moment. And then the next time I got an Apple Watch, which was Series 3, the plastic box went away and it was still in the cardboard box, but now it's just like shrouded in some paper.
Yeah.
Laid out flat.
Right.
This one is, you're not getting any of that cool first impressions. You certainly don't get the big plastic case. You just get, like, two boxes on their own.
Yeah.
And I assume that this is partly to do with saving money and partly to do with recycling and the environment. But it does lose some of the, like, wow factor, I think, compared to the original packaging from 2015.
Every year it's a little bit less nice. I think the new like pouch thing that goes around the watch itself is a neat collectible.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, although we don't know if that's going to be on the aluminum models or not. It's at least on the steel ones from what we've seen. And you don't actually like use it at any point. It's just when you first open it and then you like collect it, you know, as a keepsake, I guess. And it kind of suggests that like maybe one day you'll be able to buy a watch on its own without a band. And there's a lot of people that would want that. Not me. But I know people that keep getting the same white band over and over and they just want the watch, you know, to upgrade. And then also the ability, like, you know, maybe one day we could have the ability to pick any watch with any band and not have these preset configurations, you know, where if you want the gold watch with the sport band, you get this stone colored band and not the black one. You know, and they could do that. Although at this point, none of that's available. It's just, you know, you buy the watch that you always have and they just package it differently. One thing you know about the packaging is that paper seal around it. It was really familiar to me. And I think what it was is the Apple design book, designed by Apple in California that they did a couple years ago. If you buy that, it's a hardcover book and it's got like a paper packaging around it, that you unfold in a similar style. And then within that, it's got, like imprints of Apple products on it in like this cartoon fashion. And that's the same thing they're doing on the watch box now. It's like, oh, that's what that was. It's very similar to that. And they even show on the printed watches an Apple Watch Series 4 in space black with a space black link bracelet, which like could just be like the marketing team or like the product print team isn't talking to like the other part of the team that's like making, you know, that band go away. But that band is like on the Series 3 watch band page, $100 less, and like inventory is depleted on at least one size. So it seems like that band's going away, although it was at the demo, you know, table, and now it's in print on these watches. So it's a curious detail.
Maybe it comes back rebranded as a newer one.
Yeah, one theory I had was maybe they want to get rid of all the 38mm and 42mm printed versions, even though there's no difference, and then make new versions with the watch or without, you know, in the future. But the fact that it went down in cost by $100, both for
silver and space black. Yeah, that's kind of weird. Like, I think that band's cool. I would never personally buy it, but I think it's one of those things that kind of grounds the watch in the traditional world, like it's relatable.
Yeah.
And so getting rid of it completely would be disappointing. On the thing about them now coming in two separate mini packages, that was really intriguing to me, because if you were just looking to minimize, you know, paper wastage, I think you'd have them both in the same box.
Yeah, I think so.
By having them as like separate packages in a bigger box, to me definitely implies that they either want to sell the band, no band included, or you pick what band you want.
Right.
And I think the latter is certainly more likely, because I don't think they want to sell it watch chassis only, because it's such an easy win for them to be able to put on quote unquote $50 of value onto the price of the watch when you're buying a standard watch with a sport band, when the sport band probably costs them $1. But the latter thing, where it's like choose your own combination, I think that's something that they probably should offer at some stage. And it probably wouldn't be like at launch. It would be, you know, for a few months down the line. And then they say, oh, now you can go on the web and you can order a new watch and you can pick any band you want and we'll ship them together for you. I think that's a really nice thing for them to eventually offer.
Yeah,
me too. And that's probably where this new packaging change is going, I would guess.
Yeah, build to order Apple Watches coming soon.
Yeah.
I mean, and just in terms of like collectible stuff, I think is a lot of people are excited by that story. It's like, some people saying like I'm finally excited for the watch on Friday. It's like nothing new functionally has been learned. It's just how it's presented, but it is neat and like exciting, and it's kind of a surprise, you know. And now we just can't wait to get our own like that. Plus, we haven't seen like what the aluminum unboxing experience is like. I guess could be different. So I'm excited about that. All the reviews. It's like. A lot of them were kind of tough. Like the iPhone ones, the 10R is kind of leak, you know, hanging out there. Big question of like, one thing I liked in John Gruber's review was that he acknowledged that not everyone buys an iPhone every year. Like most people don't, but some people do. And I think that's worth remembering, is that like I buy an iPhone every year, and like I'm not the only one. Like the point he made was that there is an iPhone upgrade program for this. Like all the carriers have them too. So while it's important not to review things like from the perspective of year-over-year changes only, it is worth considering that. You know, and this year was especially different because I was kind of irked by the fact that, like, when I realized I wasn't going to upgrade because I didn't have a reason not to, I was getting kind of frustrated. Like, what is the reason? You know, I want to justify this, but you know, max being that for me, if you go from 10 to 10S, it's better now that we've seen the reviews sell the camera more than what the keynote did and the website does. Like, they showed,
and we've seen stuff like the LTE speed is a lot faster because they upgraded that chip.
Yep.
And even video now, you can, it will change the exposure and the frame rate of video while you're recording if you're going to low light situations. Right? There's loads of like random little things that we didn't hear about before. And even if you're in like Japan, you can do the transit cards via NFC in like this power reserve mode when the battery goes down. Mm-hmm. So there's more than what I was taken by the keynote, which is probably indicative of some flaw in their presentation, because that shouldn't be how it works. But it still is a relatively minor jump for an iPhone X owner if you're not going to the Mac size.
This week, 9 to 5 Mac Happy Hour is sponsored by PDF Pen, the ultimate tool for editing PDFs on your iPhone, iPad, and Mac. Using PDF Pen, you can go paperless with scanning and OCR, mark up and highlight PDFs, search and redact sensitive information, such as account numbers, correct text and PDFs without the originals, insert, remove, and reorder pages, move and adjust images, and record and playback audio annotations. Or grab PDF Pen Pro to do even more, such as create fillable PDF forms, even automatically, create and edit table of contents, convert websites into PDFs, add and edit document permissions, and much more. The latest version, PDF Pen 10, that's the numeral, not the letter X, Apple, brings a load of even more new features, including the ability to add watermarks, insert headers and footers, and OCR multiple documents in batch with PDF Pen Pro. The new precision edit tool selects, moves, resizes, and deletes line art and text, and PDF 10 improves moving and sizing images and enhancing page number styling. It also adds a new library image item view, prettier drawing colors, and new text menu options. Learn much more about PDF Pen for iPhone, iPad, and Mac at smilesoftware.com/podcast. Again, that's smilesoftware.com/podcast to learn more. All right, Mayo, something that was included in the keynote but was kind of like, you know, again, the whole presentation was a little bit wonky, but the HomePod mention, it was like, ah, oh, nice. So we knew last week that there'd be multiple name timers, Find My iPhone features, more advanced calling features, lyric search, and the new Wi-Fi feature. Now we've got the HomePod update out. It came out on Monday alongside iOS 12 and watchOS 5 and tvOS 12. And I think we've both been able to go hands-on with the HomePod software update. What's your experience been like so far?
Yeah, I am really, really happy. It's not perfect, and I'll list a few things in a second that I think need tweaking. But the big things here are timers, phone calls, lyric search. For me, they were like big omissions from the HomePod's launch in February, plus the multi-room and stereo stuff that also got delayed.
Yeah.
And because the lyric search is something that Google Assistant has definitely offered for a long time. I assume Echo has some equivalent as well. And it's just one of those things where it's like, it's a music product, right? Apple keeps talking about the HomePod as a speaker first, and it's a smart layer on top of it, right? Like, you don't have to know the name of the song.
Right.
You can just quote a bit of the song and it'll work out what you mean and play it. Like, it fits perfectly into the HomePod's messaging, and they just didn't have it. And then during the iOS 12 betas, they added lyric search into the music app, but where you have to type it in. And then by the end of it, it was working in Siri as well. So like, oh, here we go. They're going to put it in the HomePod. And sure enough, they did. I would expect that it is not as good as Google's any random lyric on the planet. Because you definitely can trick it with like some weird phrasings and stuff, and it's not clear how precisely you have to quote the lyric back for it to know what you mean. It's a bit kind of fuzzy, but for the vast majority of cases, it definitely works as it works as it does, and it feels really cool when you pull it off.
Yeah, we had to learn the word musicologist for HomePod because of all the music features that it had. Yeah, lyric search was omitted.
Yeah, like, I still think the music app on... Because remember, to get lyrics, you have to subscribe to Apple Music. And for the HomePod 2, although you generally always have Apple Music when you've got a HomePod, you technically don't need it. But to make the lyric search work, you do have to have an Apple Music subscription.
Right.
And the next big area for lyrics, I think, is doing them so they're in time with the song. And so I'm hoping that the Shazam acquisition can lead into that, because the Shazam app right now does exactly that, where it times the lyrics on the screen with the current duration in the song. So, like, you see each word highlighted as you go. Whereas at the moment, the music app, which you pay for to see these lyrics, is just like a text view that you scroll. So that's the next area for that. Music search on the HomePod via lyrics, great. I'd check that one off and say it's good enough. Multiple timers are almost there. They work very naturally. You can carry on saying all the normal timer queries that you had before. You know, 2 minute timer, 3 minute timer. You can have a 2 minute timer and a 5 minute timer running simultaneously. You don't have to label them if you don't want to. But when you check them back, obviously you have to keep a bit of a mental record in your head about which one's which. If you do label them, it generally works as well as you'd want it to. You just say set a 3 minute timer for pasta. A minute later you can ask to check the timers and it'll tell you pasta timer's got 1.5 minutes left. You can say change the pasta timer to 5 minutes, it will change the time. You can cancel the timer before it gets there. The one bit where I think it's a bit wonky is when the timer actually goes off. What I want to hear is the name of the timer.
Yeah.
Instead what you hear is ding-a-ling-a-ling-a-ling, ding-a-ling-a-ling-a-ling, pasta. Ding-a-ling-a-ling-a-ling, ding-a-ling-a-ling, pasta. Like, there's too many dings before you hear the name of the timer. Wow. And in the HomePod operating system, there's no way still to change the alert tone, so you can't even make it a shorter tone if you want to. You have to sit there for like an extra 5 seconds hearing two rounds of the ringing before it will tell you what the timer is. It probably should be more like pasta, ding-a-ling-a-ling. Like, yeah. Say the name of the timer at the up front. And then the only other problem I had with the multiple timers was I asked it to do a 5 minute timer for the kettle, and it didn't work out that what I wanted the timer to be called is kettle.
Right.
It would think it was the kettle. So at 1 minute I said cancel kettle timer and it didn't know what I was on about, because in its mental model, it's labeling it as the kettle, two words.
Right.
And in some cases it works out that it can drop the article and it only does the noun. But in other cases, like that one I experienced, it didn't do it.
Did you also have an issue where it couldn't end timers on a phone call?
Sort of.
Okay.
Yes, it was. It definitely told me it couldn't do that, but then the timer stopped, so...
Okay.
It was a bit weird. Yeah. I think it... Because to stop a timer, you can either talk with your voice or you tap the top of it.
Right.
And the timer stops. When you're on a phone call... If you ask it and different, if you are the HomePod can't do anything else when you're on the phone call apart from the phone call, but I think it telling you that it can't do anything else cancels the timer by default. So it's kind of like a workaround that doesn't really work, but that's like an edge case. I'm okay, like, with that,
because tapping it would hang up on the call,
yes,
and not end the timer. I guess which
yeah,
I
it's mean, a like, bit the color overlapping.
Code, yeah, the color code. It's like you could change the green orb to a white orb, and you know that like that tab is the timer, which is like. You know, in the timer to hanging up in the call, but you know, they'll sort it out. The thing that I tried this initially, I just did. It wasn't like a real world scenario, but I just used my kids' names and I said set a 5 minute Rory timer and a 10 minute Emily timer, and then I went back to test it and say how much time is left on my Rory timer. It was like you don't have one, and the thing is like that name is harder for me to pronounce. I guess that. With Siri, it did a no name timer, and then it picked up the Emily one quite easily. So, but that's not a real world scenario. In the kitchen is where I think I'll use this more often, which is just like, you know, the oven, the stove, food items, that kind of thing. I can also see people using this for like tracking tasks, like, you know, set a 30-minute timer for writing and a 1-hour timer to move around and have these running at the same time. I'm not sure if there's a limit to how many you could use, but you know, at least more than one for the first time. And it's only on HomePod. Like, we tried this last week, and it's not on the iPhone, not on the iPad, not on the Mac.
And there's no visual interface for it on the HomePod either. Like, you can see alarms if you go into the Home app, but there's no timers tab. So, yeah. For instance, you can't see what it's called. If you can't actually really know what it thought you said, unless you, like, ask it to check the timers and then hear it back to you.
Right. And the thing with Echo is that you know, you do multiple timers, multiple name timers. I'm not sure how the alert goes off. I've not used it recently enough to know if it does annoying chime twice and then gives you the label, but I've not found it to be an issue. But you can also check in the very terrible Alexa app to see the name of the timer. You can, like, cancel it. I don't think they run across Echo devices, but it's at least in the iPhone app where you can change it remotely and see, like, the history of what you've set. And it seems like maybe in like iOS 13 era or like some point update 12, they bring this to everything that has Siri. But right now it's a very HomePod specific thing. And it's not worth complaining about because, like, you know, HomePod competes with Echo in a way that iPhone necessarily doesn't. And so it's best that they've done it in this, you know, 1.0 version. And it kind of makes the HomePod feel complete. And, you know, this is one of the big things that got pushed back on when the initial HomePod reviews was AirPlay 2 is missing, stereo is missing, they're both there now. Now there's even multiple timers, which kind of came out of the blue. I mean, like, the only other thing people really wanted was, like, a native Spotify client, and that's, I don't think it's going to happen. You just have AirPlay for that. The other thing is the ping your device thing, the Find My iPhone thing, you know, my guess was it would only be the person who set up the HomePod, their phone, but it does extend to the family sharing setup, just like the Find My iPhone app does, which is nice. So I can say find Kelsey's iPhone, and if it's nearby, it'll ping it, and if it's not nearby, you don't get to do that. Like, I can't make her phone chime if she's at work, not at home.
I think if you just say where is it, it will. If it's nearby, it'll ping automatically, and then if it's not, it'll just say it's far away. Yeah. If you say ping Kelsey's iPhone, I'm pretty sure regardless of where it is, it will make it chime.
Nice. And the other thing is it works with the iPhone. It works with iPad. It works with the Apple Watch.
The watch.
Even if you're wearing it. And I don't think it works with the Mac yet. Is that right?
I couldn't get it to work with a Mac, but I'm pretty sure it's supposed to.
Okay. Yeah, I got it to recognize that it was trying to, but it would say that there wasn't one nearby or something like that when there was.
Yeah, because you can do this, because this Find My iPhone feature is new to Siri, not just on HomePod, but at Watch, Apple TV, and iPhone as well, and even macOS Mojave, I think.
Yeah,
On all those other devices, you can make the Mac sound off, so I'm pretty sure the HomePod's supposed to be able to do it, but for some reason, I couldn't get it to work.
Yeah, I found that the feature is more capable than I anticipated, yet a little bit of a learning curve and a little bit buggy for now. So it's a start, but it's more than I expected, at least. The phone call stuff. So previously with phone calling, you could do phone calls on the HomePod, but only after you started it from your iPhone or iPad or something. Like, you had to hand it off to the HomePod after answering or initiating the call on another device. Now you can say, Siri, call Benjamin, and it'll ring you up. And I think it even tells you, like, to hang up, say, Siri, hang up. And so you've got to say that during the phone call with the other person on the line. Or I guess maybe you can do a tap gesture, but I've not done that
yet. Yeah, you can tap it to hang up as well if you want to.
But with voice, at least, you've got to initiate Siri and then say hang up while the other person's still there. A little bit awkward, but I find that that's neat. The big problem there is that if, you know, again, the HomePod is a single user device, really. They've not designed in profiles yet for voice or any way of approaching that.
So, or anything, pretty much.
Yeah, so if you've got the personal request stuff set up, you know, like you need to have most of the good features with the voice assistant working, then, for example, my wife says, call mom, and my phone rings and calls my mom from the HomePod. It's like we have different moms. It's not right. So that's kind of a bummer. And it's like, anyone, if I want this feature on, anyone in the home can call someone from my phone through the HomePods from my phone number. It's like a little bit awkward that that's the case. So maybe.
Yeah, and you can just be using your phone, and then suddenly in the top left corner it will say a phone call started.
Yep.
And you'd be like really confused about what's going on.
9 to 5 Mac Happy Hour is sponsored by Zendura, makers of the X6 power bank and USB hub, an A8PD portable charger. 9 to 5 Mac and Zendura have teamed up to give away a brand new iPhone XS Max that retails for $1,099 brand new. And Zendura is giving Happy Hour listeners 15% off their portable charger and power bank with our special promo code in the show notes. X6 power bank and USB hub features a 20,000 milliamp battery, one USB-C input and output port, four USB-A output ports, and a built-in USB-A hub feature. X6 power bank even supports up to 45 watt power delivery, so you can charge MacBooks and other devices. Zendura's A8PD portable charger includes an even larger 26,800 milliamp battery, 30-watt power delivery, pass-through charging, a single USB-C port, and four USB-A ports. Sign up for the giveaway for the iPhone XS Max on 9to5mac.com or use the link in the show notes, and you could win a brand new iPhone XS Max for free. Entries are open through October 17th, 2018.
For me, at the moment, that's not so much of a problem because I have both the HomePods in my office, and so I'm the only person that uses them at the moment. It definitely will become a problem if I do, because I do kind of plan on moving one of these HomePods eventually into like a communal family area.
Yeah.
But for now, it's all right, and I really like that it just hands off. It basically just automates the handing off process, because mm-hmm. if you say call on the HomePod, it'll put the little green bar on the phone, and so if you start talking on the HomePod and you're like, I actually want to leave the room now, you can just pick up your phone and carry on the call back on the phone. Similarly, if someone calls you can just answer on the phone like you could always do before,
uh-huh.
or you tell the HomePod to answer the phone. You can say, hello Siri, answer the phone.
Yep.
And it just swaps it straight over and you can carry on talking. This is what I've been wanting since the speakerphone feature came out. It just felt like it should be able to do everything else, and now it really does. And you can even, if you miss a call, you can ask the HomePod who just rang, and it will tell you the number that just came in, and you can ring them back.
That's like, pretty cool.
Really, really, really nice.
I guess you can't do voicemail yet from it, can you?
I actually haven't tried the voicemail. My voicemail, because the UK is behind on this stuff, and we have very few carriers that support visual voicemail. So most of ours is like the old style voicemail where you're basically just ringing a phone number.
Yeah.
So I'm pretty sure if I said to the HomePod, call my voicemail, it would just ring the voicemail number. I don't know how it would work with like a visual voicemail system, yeah. or if it works at all. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't get a whole lot of voicemail, but when I do, I love when it's transcribed in the I guess it's still a beta feature, but it's so useful. Like, you don't even have to play the voicemail, you can just like read it. It's really, really nice. It's like actually visual voicemail. The Siri shortcuts advancement on the HomePod, in the 11.4 version of the software for HomePod, you could do this. It would just tell you that it would fail, but then it would still work. Now on 12, you don't get a failure message. And has anything changed with AirPlay with how this works now?
Yeah, so if you set up a media shortcut on the iPhone, so that could be the music app, the podcast app, Overcast, for instance. If you set up one of those shortcuts on the phone, and that means obviously register in advance that you go to the settings screen, you go to the shortcut section, you add a voice shortcut with a phrase, and say that phrase is just play, and so it's just going to play something from the app. When you ask the HomePod to play Overcast, triggering that shortcut, just to use the Overcast example, it starts the playback on the phone and changes the audio output on the phone to the HomePod.
Hmm.
So it's almost like the HomePod's playing Overcast. Right. But really, it's just still going through the phone, and it switches the output, the sound output over. Which is better than I was expecting it to work, because I was just expecting it to play on the phone.
Right.
So they've actually hooked up like the AirPlay output there. It's not people saying, oh, this means I can use Spotify on my HomePod now, and third-party music services. It's not going to be a replacement of that at all, because the shortcut system relies on you setting up every query in advance. So you just can't set up something where it's like, play this album today, play this album tomorrow, play this random thing that just popped in my head, play these random lyrics. Like, you can't set all that up in advance. It's just like a dynamic search, right? So you still can't really use it as a if you don't like Apple Music, use this other service. But say if you just want to, if you like Overcast more than the Apple Podcasts app and you just want to start a show, you can do that now. It's feeding through your iPhone, but you don't have to pick up your iPhone. You can just have Overcast play and it'll jump up on the iPod.
You just need to hook it all up before you do it, versus with Apple Podcasts, it's like built into the Siri.
Yeah.
And I'm not like super great with shortcuts yet. Like, all this is kind of a learning curve for me.
Shortcuts is very complicated. Yeah, I mean, it is. Yeah. Like, there's no two ways about it. It's powerful for power users. For mainstream users, and I think the problem with shortcuts is that it's aimed at power users, but then some power user stuff you can't currently do in shortcuts. So it's kind of limited on both ends. It's limited on accessibility as easy of use, and it's limited on functionality if you actually dive into it. So it kind of, it does feel a need for people that want it, but there's definitely a road to go, and it's certainly not a mainstream thing. It's definitely like a niche power user type feature, which is fine. It can exist. There's no problem with that. Like, it doesn't really get in the way for a normal person. It doesn't make iOS harder to use. For if you can just ignore it. Like, there's a reason Siri Shortcuts, the app, is not pre-installed with iOS. You have to go to the App Store to download it. They know that this requires a bit more thought and care and understanding than a normal OS feature would.
Yeah, for me, there are things that I would want to automate and steps that I want to chain together that are not available yet, like disabling the voice activated Siri feature every time you record a podcast on all my devices, and a lot of stuff with Apple Music and maybe even podcasts that you just can't do yet. The HomeKit stuff got better in the last version of the Shortcuts beta, and then it's in the release version. But I think anyone that feels bad about not being good with Shortcuts yet, or knowing like what to do with it, don't feel bad. That I think like future versions will make it clearer, because there are limitations right now that it has. It's a very specific thing, and it's not everything yet.
And so, you can just carry on using your phone like always.
Yeah.
And maybe the system suggests something on the lock screen that you might want to do, or you see it in Spotlight Search.
Yeah.
And you just tap it and you do it, and you're using Shortcuts in doing that, and it's making your life easier. You don't have to dive in and understand this massive workflow system. It's just unnecessary, right? Like, most people were perfectly fine up to now without ever needing this stuff, and you still can be like that.
One thing that's been kind of funny to me is seeing people make shortcuts for things that Siri could already do, but this, like, I guess the discoverability of Siri is so invisible that people didn't know. Just things like with Find Friends or HomeKit, like single commands, and you can change the phrase that way by making like a custom shorter phrase. But I think a lot of people don't know how much Siri, proper can do, because of various reasons, like how bad it might have been before, or just it was a new feature 2 years ago, but now it's invisible.
Or you're literally just looking at this microphone icon and not really knowing what to ask it. Like, yeah. They do have those help screens where it's like, here are the things you can ask Siri, but people don't realize like the percentage of users that click on those icons is very, very, very small. And the number of people that click on those icons and then actually remember what's written there is even smaller. Like, you just forget because you don't use it enough, and then it falls out of your memory, and then it's as if it never existed.
Yeah. Finally, tell me about the very awesome Wi-Fi feature of the HomePod OS 12 update.
Yeah, so this is something I've been complaining about ever since the HomePod came into my home. I have two separate networks at home for very boring reasons, but it means that where I am in the office, my phone can theoretically pick up the Wi-Fi from inside the house and the Wi-Fi that's in the cabin, and they both had two different names. And on the HomePod, until this update, you had no way of knowing which network the HomePod was connected to. With this update, it's pretty buried, but you can find it. You have to scroll, you have to go into the Home app, open the settings for the HomePod, scroll all the way to the bottom of the list, find where it says Wi-Fi address, and that's the MAC address. You tap that row, and the Wi-Fi address row magically changes to Wi-Fi name, and it says the name of the Wi-Fi network that you are connected to. That is the extent of the feature. You cannot change the Wi-Fi network from there. You cannot reset the connection. You can just know which one it's on.
It's so invisible. It's so hard to find. Like, you had to show me for me to really get it. Like, with a screen recording, it's invisible. It's like, yeah, once you get it, it's like,
it's funky.
That's it? So,
yeah. Eventually, they should, like, build it out so it's, like, an actual Wi-Fi settings panel in there.
Yeah.
Because now, at the moment, if you go into that screen and you see it's on the wrong network, the only way to force the HomePods onto the right network is to make sure the phone is on the right network and then reset the HomePods and set them up again, and they'll use the network that the phone's currently connected to.
And that is nutty.
it's crazy. But baby steps in that regard. I was so happy with the timers and the phone call stuff. Mm-hmm. Like, everything else is just gravy.
Yeah, so there's kind of a precedent now that every time there's a big point release for iOS, that we might get something new for HomePod that's kind of unadvertised. Like, you know, along the way, we got the AirPlay 2 and stereo stuff, but I think even before that, there was an interesting update. Maybe you know, there was the calendar stuff in one of the updates. So it's like slowly they can build out features for HomePod, time them with the iOS updates, and you know, it gets better over time. So this was a big one though, for sure. In terms of the other releases, so we got iOS 12 this week, we got WatchOS 5 and tvOS 12. macOS Mojave comes out on Monday, I believe. It's funny because, you know, you install these things back in June, and by the time these things come out, it's like, what's new? It's just, this is how my stuff already works. But I wanted to look back and think about some of the things that I use daily or regularly and really appreciate. You know, some of the changes, and then with some of the app updates, you do start to get to use some of the features that were there, but you couldn't actually use yet. So for me, I'll go through my list. It's pretty short, but the SMS code insertion on iOS 12, like whenever you have a two-factor codes into your messages app, when that appears on the keyboard as like a tap to insert. That is so useful because...
Yeah, that is really nice.
Yeah, you go from like juggling apps and like hoping it doesn't expire, like your 2-minute warning doesn't expire or something. And for me, I think I use it on Twitter the most. And it's just so nice. It's like, because you usually get the option of like a phone call, an email, or SMS. And not discussing like the security differences of all of this, but just the fact that like pops up on your keyboard, you tap it, and you're in, makes it so much more convenient to use those features. Also, like the fact that password managers have been upgraded to work like iCloud Keychain, like I can use 1Password and not even use the extension. Like hit a share sheet, find the extension, tap it, authenticate. Now it's like part of the keyboard too. Treats it just like iCloud Keychain, and you can even not use iCloud Keychain and use 1Password only, and it's the same experience. Or you can use both. You can use up to two of these, I believe. But that is so nice now. It's like there's no downside to having a different password manager than the sort of inferior one that's built in. And then last in iOS, in recent days, we've seen beta versions and released versions of third-party navigation apps for CarPlay. I'm on the Waze test flight, and they've got CarPlay working in beta, and that's interesting. You can change your map to daytime mode at night, and like for better visibility, you can change your car icon for like personalization, and then you can do all the things like report accidents and police, and it's kind of wonky. You can even like collect points on the road. Like I was driving, and there was a 25-point piece of candy on the road, and I'm not sure. I'm not a big Waze user. But apparently I got those points on CarPlay, like on the screen. So it's kind of wonky.
The gamification of driving.
Yeah. And then Google Maps has released on the App Store their CarPlay app in version 5 of their iPhone app. And I tried that out as well. The thing that was kind of neat there was you can change the map view to satellite. So instead of showing like a, you know, the fake map, it shows like a satellite view map, which can be kind of neat for like recognizing actual landmarks and like what the world around you looks like. This is something you could never do with CarPlay. I found it in the Waze beta searching for Starbucks, and the same thing in Google. It showed me on the first screen much further direction, like locations that are further away than the closest one. So it's kind of wonky. And then one of them was sponsored, so it said ad, which was weird to see on CarPlay. But the Google Maps one was like, you know, it's cool. Like if you use Google Maps and you get better directions from that, then you can finally use it on CarPlay, which is nice. Same thing for Waze whenever that comes out. And then there's a third one, in China that's been promoted, by Apple, but it's not out yet either. And the thing with these apps are you can't use Siri with them. So they have voice search in their own app, but not through Siri, you know, so you've got to tap to the screen to get to it. And then, it's a little bit less convenient. You do get all the navigation alerts, so you can be like in the podcast app or music app and so or the home screen and then see like your next turn if it's coming up.
Yeah, you get the little banners and stuff.
Yeah, it uses the Google Voice for all of that. And you can even use both Apple Maps and Google Maps at the same time on CarPlay and let them, you know, speak over each other. Like that actually works too. So
And if you happen to have the non-existent CarPlay car that has the second display integrated,
yeah,
the third party Maps apps can show on that display as well.
That's awesome. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I'm really, really happy with how they did the third party CarPlay for navigation. It's not like the Apple Watch where the apps are really locked down. There are limitations in there, and there is a kind of templating model with CarPlay, CarPlay third party app navigation apps, but it's flexible enough that you can make like actually good experiences on it. So
yeah,
I'm very, very, I don't really use third party mapping apps. I mean, I don't even drive, so
yeah.
It's kind of irrelevant, but I'm really, really happy that they offer it for people that like, that clearly, even, you know, 5 years on, still clearly prefer Google Maps or Waze in their location.
Yeah. Yeah. And the Waze thing is neat because like there are things like, there's a speed trap by police ahead that you might want to, you know, actually go the speed limit here, buddy. Something like that. Or like reporting an accident or seeing accidents reported. Like all that on your screen is actually useful, aside from like having like better data, you know, arguably. And then being able to, on the CarPlay screen, like tap in and report in like two taps is really fast that there is an accident here or there is a car pulled over here that you might want to, you know, avoid and go around. All that's neat, and it's not from the iPhone. It's from, you know, slightly bigger screens at lower resolutions with giant tap targets. Like, the screen of my car is 7 inches. My next iPhone is like 6.5 inches, and the resolution is way different. But the tap targets are tiny on the iPhone, and they're giant on CarPlay because it's optimized for like distance and, you know, quick interactions. So it's a funny comparison. But I find CarPlay to be actually useful, and that these apps are on there, that they can be custom enough to be their own app for better or worse. Like for me, I think that they're kind of ugly in comparison, but functionally they might be what people want. And in the settings app on the iPhone, in settings, general CarPlay, you can even rearrange the apps or remove some built-in ones, like hide them basically. And you could put Google Maps on the first screen and get rid of Apple Maps if you wanted to. Same for the podcast app and so on. So, I think people will be happy with that. And you know, the three apps on the side and like the status bar of CarPlay, those are categorized by like, navigation, entertainment, and communication or car apps. It's kind of rare. But the Google Maps icon will show up there if you use that as your last map app. And same for like third-party podcast apps. Those will show up as the sign if that's the last one you use. So it's really well done. And it's a feature that wasn't there in beta that we can actually use now. So check it out. On the watch side, like narrowing it down is so easy for me on watchOS 5. It's the podcast app because I wanted it for years. I listened to a lot of podcasts, and now on the watch, you can do that with LTE, with Wi-Fi, and there are third-party podcast apps now on the watch, like Overcast is there, but they're limited to no streaming. You've got to send the episode from the iPhone, I believe. And to me, that's just an inferior experience that I don't want to bother with. But what I want is, you know, Siri controls nice, which is there. Streaming over LTE, like a new episode comes out, you get an alert and you can play it. Like you don't have to go back to Wi-Fi, download it and sync it and all that stuff. Like it's what you'd want. there are no chapters on the watch, but that's like a small omission. I saw some people complain about that, but I wouldn't expect it to be there anyway. And the syncing works as well as it does anywhere else. So if you have a bad time with it, sometimes it doesn't sync the way that you want it to. Same way on the watch. But for me, it's functional, though. Like, it works well enough that it's only occasionally that I get upset about the syncing. Like, it's improved since earlier in the summer, I guess. And then on tvOS, it's so simple. Like, the new space screensavers, they weren't there in beta. They're there now, and they're gorgeous. So I love that. I wish it was its own screensaver, actually, so you wouldn't see the cities anymore.
It's funny, I actually prefer the cities one just because you can generally see more interesting stuff. Like, a lot of the space ones, you just kind of see a lot of clouds and general outlines, whereas the slow motion aerials over, like, the theme park and the Arctic, and they, for me, they're more interesting. But it's cool to have a mixture of all of it.
Yeah. What for do you like about the new stuff? Yeah.
Yeah, for me, I think on iOS, firstly, I'll say that my family have started to migrate their personal devices to iOS 12, and they don't have anywhere near as newer phones as we do. My brother was on iPhone 6. He updated to iOS 12, and he was very, very happy with the performance improvements. So I think that speaks a lot to, you know, it's not just empty words. Like, these are real devices where people have been having real problems. Like, all he did was swipe between the pages on the home screen and open the camera, and he was like, yeah, this is better. And, like, it's not even, we're not talking about complicated things here. It's swiping between icons on the home screen and making the camera launch quicker. But it makes a real difference to people. So, and I think they really have delivered on that, and I hope that continues, you know, well through the next couple of iOS releases. It'd be really disappointing if iOS 13 came around and everyone started complaining that their old phones had suddenly gone slow again. Like, I really hope that isn't the trajectory. For me, I would say group notifications have probably made the biggest difference for me on iOS. It's just a lot cleaner to have nice little stacks of things. And I've turned back on some notifications from some apps that I didn't before, because before they would just be in a continuous stream.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
And it would mix stuff up. Whereas now, when they're more together, if you've got 10 notifications from an app you only use every now and again, it doesn't matter as much because they're just one item in the list.
Yeah.
On the watch, there's a lot of nice things on WatchOS 5. I really like the control center being accessible from anywhere. I'm really looking forward to the WatchOS 5 changes that are obviously coming with the new watch. Very excited about that. Like, just all the UI changes, but they make stuff more round to work with the screen. I think the biggest change on the platform has to be, for me, Race to Speak, which is where you can do Hello Siri without saying Hello Siri. You just raise your wrist, you talk into the watch, and 99% of the time for me, it gets that I'm talking to Siri and it just does it. And it feels like magic. And obviously, there's clearly intent that it can derive from you actually raising your wrist. You actually have to speak into it with reasonable volume. Like, you can't whisper, and you have to keep your hand quite close to your mouth. So you are giving it a signal, but it feels like you aren't. It just feels so effortless. And I kind of want, like, the HomePod to work like that. Like, saying the two magic words just feels so old. And obviously, tackling those problems on devices like the HomePod is a lot harder, because you're not physically picking the HomePod up, for instance. But man, it does. It's so nice.
I can see this coming to, like, the iPhone next, you know, because it's a similar race to speak gesture would work.
Yeah. And, I mean, even now when they have, like, you can raise your iPhone to your ear and make a voice message for messages.
Yeah.
I prefer if you could just change that and make it work for Siri instead. Like, and I think they even had something like that at one point and they got rid of it, maybe. I feel like an earlier iPhone did that. Photo search is another cool thing on iOS, but we've spoken about this before during the beta cycle, where it's very pernickety if you do multiple queries and you don't tag them properly and you just do, like, a big long string and it's broken. If you actually figure it out, it works really well and you can drill down. One quick tip, if you use Siri, so if you say to Siri, show me pictures from this location last year of, and say, someone's face, it does a better job of working out what you mean than the textbook does. And all it will do is launch the Photos app with the right parameters pre-installed, pre-typed into the box. But it works really well. Like, you can say 1,000 days ago, 2 years ago, last year, showing pictures from my birthday. Like, all these queries that you think, like, Siri wouldn't understand what you're going about, it almost always works it out and shows you the pictures. It's really cool.
Yeah.
And then, on the negative side, I still don't like how they handle the photo library and messages, how they've made it an iMessage app now. I wish something more there would change. And they took live photo capture out of FaceTime for no good reason, and I think people are really starting to bubble up about that. Like, after iOS 12 came out, I kind of Googled around to see what on Twitter. I searched on Twitter for iOS 12, like, the top tweets. And it was generally very, very positive, which I took as a good sign. And there were, like, two strands of complaints that I could see. One was about no new emojis, because I think people had heard that the new emojis were coming, and obviously they are, but they're not in 12.0. They might be coming in 12.1 or 12.2. And then secondly, people were upset that live photos have been taken out of FaceTime. And I completely agree with them. I can see why on a group FaceTime call, live photos doesn't really make sense, because who'd you take a picture of?
Yeah.
But if you're in a one-to-one call, they should just have the button back and let you save a live photo. The current workaround is take a screenshot, but come on. Like, this was such a nice, intimate, Apple-y feature, right? And they've just got rid of it. And I'm hoping, like, the turmoil of feedback from normal users, because plenty of normal users, you took those pictures.
Yeah.
And
it's a charming feature. Like, it's useful. Like, to talk on the phone to a loved one, you get an actual, like, not a screenshot, but a moving, you know, photo of it.
Yeah, and I'm hoping this will be like the... Do you remember last year where they took out the 3D touch gestures on the older phones for no reason?
Yeah.
And then everyone complained and it came back? I'm really hoping that's what happened with FaceTime Live Photos. Like, it will return in a 12.1 or a 12.2.
Nice. Also this week we got iOS 12.1 beta, watchOS 5.1 beta, and tvOS 12.1 beta. And Group FaceTime, as mentioned, is back in the 12.1 beta. There's no Mojave beta for this yet, so it's only on the iOS devices. And we've not even tested it yet. Like, we've only seen it there. So we don't, you know if it's better or worse or how it's going, but, hopefully that comes, in October or so. This is probably the release that introduces dual SIM on the iPhone XS and XS Max. Maybe even the new emoji. And then on the watch side, the ECG app, and that whole feature. And then in the code, 95Max Ski Rambo and then Stephen Chauten Smith on Twitter have been finding lots of new things, like the fact that I think Rambo found emoji sync is likely coming because of a background process found, which makes sense from iPhone to iPad.
Yeah, Memoji sync, right? So the Animoji that you make yourself can be copied across devices.
Indeed. So, that way you don't have to do all the work on your phone and then do it all again on the iPad.
Yeah. Because up to now, very few people have two phones, so that hasn't been needed. But as soon as you add Animoji to iPad, then yeah, you need to be able to sync them.
It's so funny to me that the iPad Pro for professionals is the one that's going to have Memoji first for a while only. And then landscape support for Face ID was found by Stephen TS, and that's presumed to be only on the iPad, which answers the question of how do they do this on the iPad with only one sensor. There are other things, like I think Rambo found an iPad 2018 fall reference in code. As the days go on, there's more things discovered, so that October event is probably going to be announced soon. Aside from that, I've only put this on my watch, and that was by accident, not on the phone, because there's no restore image for the XS or XS Max yet. And last year, the way it went was there was an 11.1 beta, but not for the new phones. And so if you did the beta on your old phone, you couldn't do a backup and restore because you can't restore to a newer version of iOS. So that was a problem. This year, I'm just not doing these betas until I've got the new phones, new phone, new watch. And on tvOS, I have no idea what they're doing there with 12.1.
Well, given how many new features were in 12.0, we can expect a flood of new features on 12.1 for TV, I'm sure.
Yeah. So I'm looking forward to getting the new stuff. Like I said, I've got the watch that I will write about for pickup at Best Buy on Friday. So my morning routine is get the kids to school and daycare, go to the gym, and then I'll go hang out at a coffee shop until Best Buy opens, and then I'll go and pick up my watch and have at it. The phone, the XS Max, is supposed to come to my home on day one, but I've got little hope about that. Maybe we'll see. It's kind of a gamble on that one. And then the watch that I actually, you know, care about the most is coming a week later. So I might kind of like poke around some stores and see if there's any in stores. But I feel like if it was a week out at pre-order time, it won't be in stores on day one. So we'll see about
that. Yeah, these watches seem pretty popular.
Yeah. People are really excited about the watch. Like, even for the reviews. The phone reviews were all like, man, having to review a phone again. And then the watches were like, ah, nice, you know. So, fun swap this year and how that goes. So, all right, that's the Happy Hour Podcast for this week. You can follow me on Instagram at ApolloZach, and you can follow Benjamin on Twitter at
BZAMayo.
Nice. And if you have any feedback, you can email us at happyhour@9to5mac.com. And also follow 9to5mac on Twitter. And we'll be back next week with new devices in hand to talk about. Until then, take care, guys. Bye.